Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week.
You can't give people the best version of you if you're not showing up with a full cup. You know, the way that you interact with social media will reflect that as well. If you're, you know, feeling really miserable and you sign up to Instagram in the hopes that the likes are going to save you, Instagram likes won't fill you up until you like yourself.
It's a strange sort of compromise we've made with a lot of these social networks that we kind of think, well, I like enough elements of them to put up with some of the really, really bad stuff.
And it's really easy when you've got media telling you consistently that XYZ will make you happy, and you almost feel like you have to conform to that, and you benchmark yourself against what society tells you. It's just not true.
Thanks for checking out this week's Mental Health Monday podcast. My name's Mick Coyle. I do hope you're well, and a show that I've wanted to do for a while now, but given everything that's been going on, I've kind of delayed the conversation. I hope you sort of appreciate some of the reasons for having it, based on the fact that a lot of people now are spending a lot of time at home, looking at screens, looking at social media. I wanted to spend a little bit of time just discussing really some of the issues around social media at the moment. And it's conversations we've kind of had before, but I've got a social media expert on the program who kind of works in the field. So she's not a psychiatrist or a mental health expert, and nor am I. But I think the conversation around mental health and social media is very much based on sort of personal experience. So hopefully you'll relate to some of the things that we're talking about. There's some hints and tips in there too, with Daisy Morris. Now, normally at the start of each episode, I say to people to get their name and title, and Daisy does such a decent effort of describing who she is and where she's from. I've left it in the edit this week. So you'll be able to hear that, who she is and what she's all about as well. I mentioned in the conversation as well that I'm going to set up a Mental Health Monday Facebook group. And I've done that off the back of recording the podcast, between recording it and putting it out. If you want to go onto Facebook and type in Mental Health Monday Facebook, in fact, you just have to type in Mental Health Monday and look for the Mental Health Monday symbol. Then feel free to join. I think that'll send me an invite. Now, if it looks like there's no members, that's because it's only just launched. So don't worry about that. You'll be the first one in there. And I'm going to take responsibility of moderating everything that goes in there too. So it's not necessarily going to be a free-for-all, because I think in the world of mental health, you've got to be careful around that. But if you're an organization, you've got events, you can post it in the group. If you've got Zoom meetings, if you've got various different things that are going on that will boost people's mental health and have a positive impact on your local community, absolutely get it in the Mental Health Monday Facebook page and we'll share that. I'll also share the podcasts and I'll share some of the great stories that are being told around the country when it comes to mental health. So it's going to be hopefully a really good place and hopefully a really good hub for some of the amazing work that's going on from a mental health point of view. So go over to the Facebook for the Mental Health Monday Facebook group. It's new for 2021. Right, so don't forget, if you are listening to the podcast now, please do share it on social media with your friends. Use the hashtag Mental Health Monday. I really appreciate it when people do that. And the numbers for the last few months of 2020 have been really, really high. Absolutely brilliant. Please do let people know you're listening to the Mental Health Monday show. Check out the Facebook group as well. First up, though, let's have a conversation. Don't forget, details of different organizations you can speak to in regard to your mental health and where you can find them will come at the end of the podcast. So it's time to say hello to this week's guest.
I'm Daisy. I am the founder of The Selfhood, which is essentially an online platform that empowers small business owners, freelancers, anyone that's really started any kind of hustle to do their own social media, but feel empowered about it as well. My mission is really to make social media feel more human. So I do that sort of on the side. And then I also have clients that I work with on a one-to-one basis, again, in social media, but I work with anyone from fashion brands to lifestyle brands to hospitality, restaurants and bars. Portfolios fairly varied, but in a nutshell, social media.
You're a good person to speak to when it comes to social media. And I think at the start of a new year, sometimes people make New Year's resolutions, and so much of our lives are based around sort of the amount of time we spend looking at our phones. So I think this is going to be an interesting episode of Mental Health Monday, because neither you or I are like psychologists, although I think you've studied psychology, haven't you? In terms of, we're not psychiatrists and we're not mental health professionals. But actually, I think the conversation we're going to be having is going to be really relevant to so many people. I'm going to put my cards on the table right from the off, Daisy, and just let you know that about
about 18 months to 2 years ago, I had to call time on some of my social media. So I had like a professional Twitter and a personal Twitter, and I binned the personal Twitter. I had an Instagram account, I binned that. I had a Facebook account, I've been that, but I've actually brought it back for work purposes.
Okay.
I had a LinkedIn account, which I got rid of as well. And the reason I did those things was because I was finding that I was more and more of my time I was spent on the old thumb scroll. And once I'd checked one, I'd flip to the next one. And I wasn't losing hours and hours in a day to it. But I was finding that I was doing it and then thinking, I'm not even benefiting from it. I'd catch myself doing it and think, What are you even doing? And I wonder whether or not you've got to that stage yet, or if you've found your way through that stage.
Absolutely. And I have to be completely honest with you. I think particularly at the beginning of the pandemic, we were stripped of all human connection. So where we were used to going for Friday drinks at the pub with teammates, or, you know, seeing friends and family at weekends, going into the office, you know, it was just gone in an instant. And I think we all turned to our screens to actually feel that connection. And it was almost like, well, if I can't see you in person, I want to, you know, it's almost like that voyeurism thing of like, well, what's everyone else up to? I want to see how everyone else is coping. And not only that, I think throughout the pandemic, a lot of people use social media as a primary news source. So people were checking Twitter constantly for updates, Facebook. And while, you know, you kind of can't help that behavior, it's just something that we all did. I definitely found myself in that sinkhole, and I could really feel that kind of digital burnout where I knew I was opening apps and I was filled with dread. And it wasn't, you know, I wasn't checking in to see how people were doing. It was almost like the obligatory, well, what's going on? I feel disconnected. And it got to a point where I had to do the same. I had to turn all my apps off for the weekend and just kind of reconnect. But I think once you get to that point, sometimes, unfortunately, it does take getting to that point to really have the awareness to know this isn't good for me right now. And then you can put the steps in place to say, okay, well, I know I don't feel great at the moment. Social media probably isn't aiding with my mental health and how I feel. And then you can put those steps in place to actually, you know, monitor your usage. But yeah, I've absolutely been there. And I think quite a few people have, especially with the way that the world is. So I can definitely relate to that for sure.
I think so much of it is, they call it FOMO, don't they? The fear of missing out. That if you don't go on and you don't scroll and you don't keep looking, you won't find the thing that's going to bring you some element of joy and happiness. And if you've not found it, it's because you've not been scrolling long enough. That's a really powerful hold that these devices have got over us.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's what's quite interesting is that we're all desperately looking to see what other people are doing and where they're going and what they're up to. And actually, our happiest moments exist in the present moment. And don't get me wrong, I am a huge advocate for social media. And I think there's so many positives to it. And actually, so many incredible communities have been born out of social media that massively help people in different communities. And, you know, it definitely has its upsides, but we do feel like we're going to miss something, or, you know, we're missing out on something if we're not constantly connected, when it's not really the case. I think as long as you can use it in a way that benefits you and you're using it for the right reasons, you know, if you're networking or stay in touch with friends and family, that's great. But I think it's really important to acknowledge when you are starting to feel like you're either comparing yourself to other people, or you feel drained by it, or it's making you feel anxious. When you do begin to feel like that, just recognize, you know, is it time to take a step back? Is it time to look at who you're following and really assessing, do these accounts make me feel good? If not, probably worth a mute or unfollow. And also how much time you're spending, because, you know, we are in the time of the Zoom, which, you know, we're spending so many hours a day on meetings and then looking at our phones. You know, we are just going to get extremely fatigued by screen time. So I think it's really about having the awareness to know how it's making you feel. And there's nothing wrong with actually taking a step back and a bit of a, you know, a sabbatical from social media. That's absolutely fine.
No, absolutely. And I think some people will say, you know, well, where's the conversation around mental health? But I think to a certain extent, that thing that if you're doing something so much and it's not bringing you joy, then you're also denying yourself an opportunity to do something else that might actually find, you might say, find those sort of same feelings of joy, be it reading a book, taking up an exercise. I was told, and this is a brilliant piece of advice, that, you know, when you do it, if you do a jigsaw, the feeling that you get when you find a piece that goes in the jigsaw is the same feeling you get when you see something positive on social media, or that you get a like or a retweet or a share or anything like that. It, your brain gets the same feeling.
Wow.
Because it's essentially you were looking for something, you found it, and it worked. And you can get the same from a jigsaw. Now, I'm not saying we should all be sitting on the train doing jigsaws in the morning, but I think it's about knowing why our brains are doing this. And I'm guessing as well, you working in the marketing field, you'll know sort of that companies and advertisers, they know that we're sitting there with our thumbs scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And I guess they're designing and trying to create content that fits into these little worlds that we've created for ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, anyone that's spending money on advertising or investing in content or hiring social media managers, you know, whatever they're doing, they are ultimately trying to attract an audience. And yes, their objectives might be different. They might be trying to get them onto a website. They might be trying to get them to make a sale or subscribe to something. They're ultimately wanting people to take action. One thing that I would say, though, is that I think as consumers, we are all waking up to marketing. I think we're all very much more aware. I know that's quite a general statement and it might not, you know, apply to everybody right now, but I think generally speaking, you know, people are a lot more aware of when they're being advertised to, and I think people are asking a lot more questions about brands and their motivations and their, you know, CSR policies and their values, and I think people are digging a bit more deep into that. That's not to say that you know, some of the things and the tactics that brands will pull is right or excused. Definitely there's some quite concerning behavior, I think, that goes on behind the scenes, and the way that people are, it's ultimately manipulation, if we're being completely honest. Not all brands, but, you know, quite a lot of the time when people are sending out marketing messages and they're asking people to do something as a result of seeing an advert or a piece of content, it is manipulation, you know. But I know that sounds quite dramatic, but it is.
But it, I mean, to a certain extent, though, that's like the madman thing, isn't it? Of, you know, trying to tell someone that smoking a particular cigarette on a poster in a Subway, the Subway, the underground, not the sandwich place, is going to be either good for your health or make you look cool or make you more attractive. That's always part of the sell. But I think to a certain extent, the advertising has moved on from that, hasn't it? That sometimes if you saw an advert, it was because you saw a celebrity holding a bar of chocolate or you saw someone going, buy this drink. Whereas actually now so much of what you see, it's almost blended, hasn't it, into sort of more lifestyle-y type things, which might be more accessible for some people, but you've still got to be aware that that's actually what you might be looking at, that it's not a truthful representation of somebody's life. It might be a paid for service in a hotel room made up to look like a living room that person doesn't really live in, but you're aspiring to be that person whose life doesn't actually exist. And we've got to be smart around that when we're on social media.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. And I think that probably falls a bit into kind of influencer culture and this idea that we are aspiring to what is really a showreel, because no one puts, in fact, I'll retract a little bit. There are some influencers and there are some people with platforms that, you know, are hugely committed to transparency and they will share their bad mental health days online. I think that's really healthy and I think that's great, because a lot of the time all we see is this glossy, shiny image of somebody else's life that we just deem to be true, that is just how they exist, when it's categorically not. And I think that's where it becomes quite dangerous, because, you know, we could be having a really bad mental health day, see somebody else, you know, in these amazing designer clothes in an amazing hotel that has probably been paid for by the brands, and, you know, that just isn't reality. And the reality is, if that is their reality, they probably had to work really, really hard and endured some quite bad mental health themselves to get there. Because, you know, if you are living that lifestyle, people will be envious, you will get trolled. There's so much unglamour that comes with the glamour. So I think as well, it's just, again, being mindful of the fact that what might appear to be this incredible life you know, also comes with its hardships as well. And the grass, you know, isn't always as green on the other side. So, yeah, I think influencer culture in particular is very interesting, especially at the moment.
In terms of the social media channels, I think that influencer culture, Instagram is a big one for that one, because it comes with that sort of image and it's all about that, yeah, that first appearance as well. But then each of the different social networks kind of have their own ways of doing things. I tend to use Twitter for like news updates, both getting news out there, sharing, yeah, content, but also, you know, finding out, you know, news about whatever is going on, vaccine, government updates, whatever it is. And I find that to be really useful. But I'm also aware that Twitter is a place where you can get hammered for expressing an opinion, that you, yeah, can get weighed in on by either bots or fake accounts. You can get spammed by a million and one different people. And you think it's a strange sort of compromise we've made with a lot of these social networks, that we kind of think, well, I like enough elements of them to put up with some of the really, really bad stuff. But the really, really bad stuff for some people will be the worst, will be enough to drive them, you know, off the app or the channel, or it'll, you know, be enough to drive them to, you know, a despair, which then has an impact on their mental health.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's actually really interesting to see how the different social media platforms are different and the ways that people do engage with them. So exactly as you've said, Twitter is just riddled with very unhappy people, I would imagine, to have to troll people that severely. It's quite dangerous, actually, in some cases. Instagram is very much, yeah, as you said, about the image. And then something I find quite interesting, actually, is TikTok, which is an emerging platform, which is primarily used by younger people, seems to be the most safe and inclusive. So I know that they've actually spent quite a lot of time investing quite heavily into their privacy and security, and they have a zero tolerance for bullying. And I think actually the younger generation, the Gen Zs, they all seem very mindful of this kind of thing, and they feel like a lot more community-led. And I think it's actually really interesting to see the behavioural habits of how we all engage with social media. But it is bizarre, isn't it? You know, when you think about Twitter, that some of the things people say, you just can't imagine them saying that to people to their face. So why is it that we feel so compelled to be so awful because we're sat behind a screen? I guess you're shielded from the repercussions, but it's quite crazy, the culture that comes with social media.
But I wonder if it's just like the modern equivalent of like the other stuff that people would do in the past. So like an example would be like if you saw a really, really nice building, but you had no part in that building and you had no chance of ever working in that building, you might scrawl some graffiti across it to try and make your mark on that particular moment, even though your mark was a negative one, but at least people saw it and at least people would recognize that you had some sort of influence on it. And I can't help but think that that's a little bit like what Twitter is, that people might, I mean, imagine being like a grown man in your 30s or 40s and criticizing Greta Thunberg. There is absolutely nothing about your existence that affects her or that really affects you in any way, shape or form. But I can understand that there will be people who feel so almost like down on their own lives. They think, well, you know what? I can't be positive about this person and I can't achieve some of the things that they're achieving because she's got a Nobel Prize. But I can make a mark on her and her campaign by saying something awful. And the other thing is that if you do that, say something awful, then suddenly your phone pips up with notifications of people who suddenly turn on you. And then suddenly you're the centre of attention. And actually, I think in some cases, you've achieved your goal by that point, because Greta Thunberg was centre of attention and now you've made it about you. And that makes you feel better. But that whole thing, whether it's the graffiti or it's the trolling, comes from a really negative starting place anyway, and something which society, as a society, we've not really dealt with, I don't think.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think with anything, actually, you know, if we talk badly of people that we don't even know, that's because we feel an insecurity in ourselves, or we see something in them that we wish we had. So your example of the 30 to 40 year old men probably feel insecure because there is a young female that's, you know, killing the game, to be quite honest. But yeah, I think it is. It's, you know, when we feel bad, sometimes we say negative things or do negative things to either try and pull the people around us down with us, or to try and, you know, to try and belittle what they're doing. So I think, yeah, it is, it's really difficult. And I do really feel for people that are at the heart of trolls, because, you know, we spoke briefly about influencers, and the reason I said, you know, they probably haven't got to where they are without the hardships. There are so many people, I see it daily, that receive death threats, like, for just being alive, from people they've never even met. I mean, you can't imagine knocking on someone's door and verbally giving them a death threat. So why can you, why, what gives you the right to do that in someone's direct messages when they're just trying to live their life? So yeah, it's, but then I guess you have to ask the question, have they got to such a bad point with social media that they now feel the need to be a troll? Like, how has that happened? Because for the most part, you know, people are very nice on social media, and, you know, there's so much opportunity to build communities and network and make great connections. And it is such a shame that, you know, there is a small minority of people that feel the need to just be, you know, quite frankly, just disgustingly rude.
There's some great advice on the Young Minds website. I just thought I'd give it a quick mention, because I think it'll help people out, because obviously it's aimed at young people. I think totally it fits for anyone. An interesting one is unfollow accounts that annoy or upset you. And it seems like, absolutely, don't look at stuff that you don't like or is going to upset you. But for some reason in social media, we've just accepted that that's part of the package. Of course, it doesn't have to be. Delete an app from your phone for a week. Now, I thought that was a good thing. That's not about deleting your account. That's just taking the app off your phone and not looking at it if you don't need it for work or something like that. Limit social media time pre-bed. That's another thing. You don't want to be focusing on all that negativity, then jumping in bed. That's aside from the blue light and everything like that. Ask, am I doing something positive for myself and those who see this? Now, that is a killer question, isn't it? I wonder if every single app had that on it just before you hit send. That would change the game. Yeah. And the other one is find your crowd. I think this is the thing that I've not quite got my head around yet in terms of social media, finding your crowd. And if it's talking about advertising or marketing, you're looking for the people who would buy your product. But if you're looking as a human being, you're looking for people who are similar to you. And yet still we try and find people who disagree with us, or we go looking for negative things that we're saying. But finding your crowd in any set of circumstances, as well as being open to other ideas, of course, is what we do as human beings. But again, on social media, we do things a little bit differently.
I think that's all of what you said is actually really interesting and great advice as well. And just on your point of you know, finding your tribe, as humans we are tribal people. You know, we connect in groups, and we gravitate towards groups. And I know I mentioned this earlier, but I think there are so many positive groups and communities that have been born out of social media. So I actually follow a group called The Grief Gang, who speak really openly about grief and their stories. And it's like a safe space for anyone who's lost someone to connect and share. And I think that's amazing, because grief seems to be really taboo, especially in the UK. I think we're so polite. It's like, oh, yeah. Wipe your eyes and get on with it. And actually, when you lose someone, all you want to do is talk about it and talk about them. But so that's one example. There's also another girl that I follow. She's called Millie Gooch. She runs a Sober Girl Society, which is a society that encourages anyone who wants to explore sobriety to do it in a group and judgment-free. And she gives really good tips and advice. And there's loads of Facebook groups as well. Like, Facebook is riddled with groups and with offering advice, and anyone that's kind of in a similar situation. So I think, you know, if you are listening to this and you're thinking, gosh, I'd love to join a group or find, you know, a community of people that resonate with some of the things that I feel, you know, feel, I think if you just type into Facebook or in the search bar on Instagram, you can find some of these communities who really are there just to connect and support. And I've definitely found, you know, I use social media an awful lot for my own personal work and client work, and I found an amazing community of people that massively support my work and what I do. And yeah, I think that there's definitely people out there. And just on your note as well, sorry, about the deleting of apps, something that I do throughout the workday is just switch off all my notifications, because it's so easy, isn't it? When you're sat at your desk and you see a notification pop up, and before you know it, you've spent 20 minutes trawling through Instagram watching cheese pie recipes that you're never going to make. So I think if you can switch off your notifications and not looking at your phone before bed, you know, absolutely, I think that's a really good tip. And just before, and just as you wake up in the morning, if you actually, I heard something really interesting. It was a quote, I can't remember where it's from, but somebody said, you wouldn't let 500 strangers walk into your bedroom first thing in the morning, but that's exactly what you're doing when you're opening social media apps. So when you wake up and just before you go to sleep, it's really important that you have that time to just wake up, wind down naturally, because you'll just be wired from everything you've consumed otherwise.
I'm nearly 40 now, right? So like, I'm of a generation and I've seen all this stuff come in, and I can now like think, well, you know what? I'm not going to bother with TikTok. It's not going to be for me. And that's fine. But I think as well, there's almost like an expectation though, that there's like a new generation who for this is just normal. It's what you have on your phone. You know, a mobile phone for me was text messages when they first came out, and then you can make a call. And then I got a phone which had WAP, which was like the first version of like the internet. This is like, don't laugh. But that's what it was for. Is now there's like people who are just sort of native to all of this stuff as well. And that makes me think, does that make you better placed to understand it? Or actually, does that make you more vulnerable to making the same mistakes that we didn't learn as an older generation, and therefore we didn't teach those mistakes to a younger generation? So they just picked up a lot of our bad habits. Actually, what you just described there, you know, that idea of going, something you're interested in, go and find a group on Facebook on it. And yet for so many people, Facebook, the starting point for Facebook is still people who you went to school with 5 years ago, 10 years ago, in my case, more than 20 years ago. That's still like, and Facebook seems to know that and go, oh, find all these people you went to school with. And you think, well, it's like you're trying to find your way back in time. But that's not about living now. That's not about where you are now. That's about who you used to be. And then of course you then go into the thing of what do they look like now? Are they married now? Do they have a nice car now? It doesn't matter. You've not cared about this. You've not even remembered this person from 15 or 20 years ago. Why would you even look? It's irrelevant, but it almost tells us that it's relevant. We're almost led to believe that it's relevant, and then connect with them and message them. And I don't know. I don't think we've not got that right yet. There's still, and now people do that thing where they share things that they've done on social media. Like, we're nostalgic for the past on social media. We're not even nostalgic for the past of stuff we did outside of social media. We're nostalgic for stuff we did on social media. And that's when you end up in a bit of a loop where your life doesn't move on. It just frames itself around an algorithm of what you have done in the past. And I think that was a large part of the reason why I wanted to take a step away from it, because I wanted to make it relevant to me now. And that's what I try and do now, use accounts, use groups which are relevant to the things I'm doing at that given point, without constantly looking backwards, if you like.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I think, you know, ultimately, if we're being honest, the reason these apps exist is to make money, and they want us to stay on for as long as possible. And I think that's where having the balance is super important. So, you know, if you are feeling overwhelmed by how much you've used it, and, you know, you can recognize that some of these things are coming up. So, you know, suggesting your old school friends that you haven't spoken to in God knows how long. I do think it is, you know, about your attitude towards all of that. But yeah, it's It's a tricky one. I think you really do just have to draw the line when it's there, but who knows what the future holds. I think it's quite interesting watching how the younger generation interact with social media, because I think, although, yes, exactly as you've said, they are digital natives, you know, they are fluent in all social media. And, you know, I've got younger cousins that are 18 and they think that WhatsApp's for old people. I thought I was really cool because I use WhatsApp. They're like, no, we only talk on Snapchat. And I said, well, why? And they said, because your chat's gone in 24 hours. And I think what they've actually seen is the likes of my generation and above being scrutinized for mistakes that they've made on social media 10 years ago, whether that's a bad tweet or, you know, a bad Facebook update that an employer's seen, or, you know, celebrities getting slaughtered in the press for something they said on social media years ago. That generation has grown up around that and they've seen that happen. And I think they're so hyper aware of their online image, and they know that their digital footprint is not going to be erased anytime soon. So I think they actually take their privacy very seriously, which sounds quite ironic because, you know, we think of young people as, you know, just twerking on TikTok all the time. And I think, you know, there definitely is an element of that. But I think from actually, you know, how much of their personal life they're actually willing to give away is quite interesting, because I know that, like, my parents, for example, their Facebook feeds compared to my Facebook feeds, completely different. You know, people are moaning about their microwave and the fallout that they had with their mate last week. And I think, you know, that's because that's normal for us. Like, we grew up around oversharing, whereas young people have seen that and thought, not for me. And there's actually something I learned the other day called a Finsta account. So you have an Instagram account, and then your Finsta is like where you show the real side of you, but only your real close friends can see that. And it's like your pictures with no makeup and, you know, in your pajamas, because, you know, the rest of the world can't possibly see you looking like that. So it's quite interesting to see how, you know, people's attitudes and behaviours are changing towards it.
Do people as well need to be aware of the limitations of social media? You must have first-hand experience of this, that people think, if I set up this Instagram account or if I set up this social media channel, it's going to change everything for me without the background work being done or the other things being in place. Is that one of the things that people have got to bear in mind as well, that just in and of itself, it is just a platform, and you've almost got to have the life to back it up, or you've got to have the product to back it up, and that's got to be where the quality is. The sheen of an Instagram account isn't going to be enough to make a success or build a personality. It's got to be within, if you like, already.
Absolutely, that is one of the main things that I preach, I suppose, is that if you are using Instagram to attract clients or customers, if you're a brand, your content has to serve them as much as, you know, you want them to make a sale. You have to give and give and give before you receive, because people now use social media for so many different reasons, whether it's to learn something new, whether it's to catch up on news, be entertained. It's your job as anyone who's trying to sell anything to entertain people, let them get to know you, almost have that nurture period before you then ask them to make a sale. And I think if you're using it as a person, as an individual, as opposed to a business, you can't give people the best version of you if you're not showing up with a full cup. And, you know, the way that you interact with social media will reflect that as well. If you're, you know, feeling really miserable and you sign up to Instagram in the hopes that the likes are going to save you, Instagram likes won't fill you up until you like yourself. You know, it has to start from within. And that's, I know that sounds quite cheesy, and it's so much easier said than done. I'm fully aware of that. It is so, so difficult sometimes. I've done it myself. I've 100% outsourced my confidence on likes before. But then I think you get to a certain point and it takes a while, and I'm definitely not even anywhere near being able to say I can fully do this every single day. But I think sometimes, you know, you do just get to a point where you think, this is just an app. It's not real life. I am not my worth is not based on how many people follow me or how many people engage with me. My worth comes from what makes me happy. And that is not external validation. That's what makes you happy as an individual. And whether that is, you know, excelling at work or spending quality time with your friends and family, or just spending alone time cooking yourself your favorite meal, whatever that looks like for you, that has to take priority before, you know, you can seek that validation from elsewhere, because it just doesn't work like that. It just doesn't.
How close are we as a society, do you think, to nailing that message, to understanding that message? To me, it feels like we're quite a way off.
I think so. Sadly so. I think we are. And I think I'm hoping that because of the pandemic, and conversations like this, they're so important and they have to continue, because you know, sadly, we do live in a world that validates people on their inverted commas success. And we've created a society that glorifies people that are rich and skinny and go to nice places, when actually those people probably aren't as happy. And happiness is so subjective, and you have to rate your happiness based on what that looks like to you. You might not need loads of money. You might not need to go to fancy places to feel truly happy. And I think you really have to dig deep and ask yourself that question. What makes me happy? What lights me up? And it's really easy when you've got media telling you consistently that XYZ will make you happy, and you almost feel like you have to conform to that, and you benchmark yourself against what society tells you. It's just not true. It's just not true. But it's really hard to not think like that.
Inspired by this conversation today, Daisy, what I'm going to do, I'm going to create the Mental Health Monday Facebook group. I'm going to create it as a group. So it's just like a place where people can go and we can have conversations about things we've talked about on the podcast, but also people can also share, you know, organizations with like workshops they're involved in, helplines and stuff like that. I think if we do that, actually, that's maybe we'll that's us practicing what we preach, and kind of saying, well let's do something like that. So there we go. I'll set that up on the on Facebook.
So good to hear that. Yes, I'd love to join as
so
well.
So we'll do it as a group, because then there's the inclusivity, and it's not just you know, you're just firing stuff at a wall. It's actually about people and people seeing it. So I'm gonna do that to try and sort of get through some of the things that we've discussed as well.
Amazing.
There's a few well-being apps as well that people can check out as well. I know Yapa is another app that people have looked at as well, which you've got a much stronger mental health focus as well. If there's one bit of advice that people should take away from you today in terms of your expertise in the world of social media, because you know how it works from both sides, what is that advice, and how do you reckon people can maybe just have a slightly healthier relationship with social media in 2021?
Really good question. I think always be true to yourself and know that Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, it will always be there. It will always be there if you need to leave and come back. And don't feel like you have to consistently be online. You really don't. And your mental health 100% will always come first. So if you need to take some time off, definitely honor what you need. And I think this year especially, I think last year we were able to slow down somewhat and really reflect on life and the world, and I hope that people continue to do that. And yeah, I would just say take the time that you need away from it if you need to.
Absolutely. And as you say, it will be there if you want to. And like I say, I've now gone back to some of these channels now. And actually, I feel like the way I use them is a little bit better, a little bit, I don't say healthier, that might be the way. But I've not fallen into the traps the second time around. So I've done stuff I keep now family photos. I keep that to like family WhatsApp groups, because I know I don't need anyone else to see pictures of my family.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to show them off. You know, they're not a product that I need to sell. I'm not trying to become some influencer dad or anything like that. So I can keep that to myself. And also, I've done this as well with some websites too, which, you know, there are websites which are essentially the Instagrams of the web, which are just, here's the celebrity photos, keep scrolling. And there's literally, yeah. we all know the one I'm talking about here.
I know
There's like 1,000 stories in a row. And if you just keep looking until you found one that you're interested in. And it has odd language, like clickbait language to lure you in. So I just thought, you know, I'm just not going to go on there. It's not worth it. I've done it with. There's one of the news channels as well, which I'm not convinced has enough news to qualify for running 24 hours a day. But it does. So you watch it thinking, let's wait for something to come round that I find interesting. Yeah. But I think if it was big, it would already be on. If it was, you know, if it was a story, it would already be here. So I think and this is me as a news person saying I watch slightly less news. But I still get the same amount of news. I just absorb it in a way which is much more easy to comprehend, and then to understand as well. But I think everyone will reach all those sorts of things at their own pace and in a way which is right for them.
Agreed. I actually read something really interesting the other day that said create more than you consume. And I think if you're looking to be inspired, or you know, you need time off to just breathe and think about the world a bit differently without getting, you know, too hippy dippy, you're not gonna find that through a screen. It's about getting outside and, you know, getting creative. And you know, you just can't do that on your phone. It's just not possible. So, and my other second piece of advice would be, create more than you consume.
Excellent. There's nothing wrong with being hippy-dippy as well.
Okay, good, because I am very much so.
We'll create that as a second group, the hippy-dippies.
Let's do it.
Daisy, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate your insight as a social media guru. And if people want to find out more about selfhood, what social media channels are you on? Are you deliberately on them all, or do you pick some your favourite ones?
No, I'm not. I'm primarily on Instagram. So my handle is @the_self_hood. I'm also on LinkedIn. And I'm about to start YouTubing. I'm going to get down with the kids and see what this YouTube's all about. But no, primarily LinkedIn and Instagram for now.
Brilliant stuff. A pleasure to get you on the program today. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday.
No, thank you. Really good to chat to you.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter @MrMickCoyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.